11119 has a great ring to it as we celebrate the service of our brave men and women in the armed forces on this Veterans Day. Adam Lepp here, taking a week off last week, which we'll get into. This show is called A Finer Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam and the Professor, Professor being on the line with me, Dr. Ron Feynman. We were going to actually tape a show for last week, but plans got a little crazy around here, and so we just did a reprise encore of the previous week's show because it was just so good. Because anytime we get together, we have fun, we tell jokes, we sometimes get at each other's throats, but we always end up with a handshake as friends. And with me, you know, always a wisecrack at least twice a minute. So let's go ahead and dial somewhere where it's a lot warmer than it is here, as it's been a bit of a prelude to winter the last several days, into southern Florida. Ron, how are you doing on this fine Veterans Day Monday?
I'm doing fine, but the weather is quite cool compared to what it normally is. We have a cold wave going through the whole country, and it's hit down here where it's down to the 70s.
Oh, the 70s. You better get out your parkas and start buying a new super heavy-duty furnace. Because, you know, here we've had temperatures around 20. Some snow forecast early this week, but that's okay. I enjoy the change in the seasons. It makes you appreciate the warmth more, and it's kind of fun. You know, I don't mind building a snowman and turning on the heat, keeping myself warm under the blanket, all that good kind of stuff. Ron, like myself, you have great admiration for the brave men and women in our armed forces. Like myself, if I'm not mistaken, you are not a veteran.
That's correct. I'm not a veteran.
I have, again, some veterans in my family. The most closest one is my dad, who just passed away, of course. He was in the Army, and not only was he in the Army, when he was in the Army in Deutschland, West Germany at the time, they had a son named Adam. Don't mind what year it was, but that son Adam is the one talking right now. So certainly my dad's service in the Army in Europe is very near and dear to me. Are there any veterans in your immediate family, Ron? I don't think we've ever talked about this. I guess I was kind of wondering.
I had a couple of uncles who were in World War II, but nobody else, no.
So any thoughts on Veterans Day? Are you like me, where I know the way to say it? I just wouldn't work well in the armed forces. I don't like the structured atmosphere. I don't like taking orders.
Neither do I.
I mean,
but I must say I have high respect for anyone who sacrificed for his country and gone off to unpleasant and dangerous circumstances. And of course, all those who have passed away, in battle, and those who have been wounded and are in veterans' hospitals, which we tend to forget about.
Yeah, and it always comes up, how much time and effort and money do we spend on our veterans? And of course, one controversial topic is, should we be spending more effort and money on veterans than we do on people who are immigrating to the country, even if it's legal immigration, let alone the illegal immigration? That certainly is a hot topic, which comes up. And we have Donald Trump and his bone spurs, Pete Buttigieg, who is a veteran running, of course, for president in a campaign which seems to be getting more notice every day. And we'll be, of course, talking about him and his competitors later in the show, as we'll continue to do until Election Day, coming up in just under 52 weeks from now. In the United States, Ron, we're just unique that when you join the military, it's a career. You're not going to get rich on it, but if you move up the ranks, it becomes rather prestigious and gives you great stories to tell your kids, your grandkids, your friends, and you know that you had a part in preserving the freedom that you and I both cherish and sometimes take for granted. As I mentioned a few weeks ago, recently the city of Columbus decided not to celebrate Columbus Day and actually start celebrating Veterans Day. It used to be where Veterans Day wasn't a city holiday, that the garbage men would still come, the city offices were open, but Columbus Day was celebrated. Now it was actually the opposite. They essentially ignore Columbus Day, even though it's, of course, named after Columbus, and Columbus has become a very controversial character. We're not really going to get into that because it kind of gets a little annoying discussing that after a while, but rightfully so, they're now celebrating Veterans Day. And Veterans Day is kind of unique in that it's always celebrated on the 11th. It's kind of convenient when it's Monday because that makes for a long weekend. But next year, if I'm not mistaken, it'll be Wednesday. So it'll be kind of in the middle of the week. So, and like Christmas, or it's not dependent upon being a fourth Thursday of the month, like Thanksgiving, second Monday of a month, like many holidays. It is always on the 11th because that does have symbolism. So again, we salute the brave men and women who are, I can assure you, braver than I am, and anybody in the service right now. Your efforts are not forgotten. And thank you so much for preserving the freedoms that we have in this great country. Not a perfect country. We've certainly shown many holes in our system of late, but still the greatest land in the world, and I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. And
I want to mention that Veterans Day is of course celebrating the end of the First World War in 1918. That's not the Second World War, but it covers all veterans.
Yeah, it doesn't matter when you served, what branch you served, what rank. All veterans are important. Don't have to be a four-star general to be an important veteran. The private who just joined the Army is still important. And if you are a veteran...
I want to point out, PTSD is a growing issue in the military, particularly in recent times. So many veterans who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan have had PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and it's become recognized as a real issue, not something to be ignored.
Without question. And I guess that's part of my fear of being in the military, and why I admire veterans and active service people so much, is I know that would affect me. I know I'm sensitive to a lot of the things that cause PTSD, and it wouldn't be good for me. And it just makes me admire people who have served, who are planning on serving, who are currently serving even more. And we can hardly ever do enough for our veterans. And at least today we can recognize that, but it should be a 365-day a year recognition. And we encourage our listeners to take that into account.
One of the nicest things to do around Christmas is go to the local veterans hospital and meet the veterans that are living in those hospitals and thank them for their service. That's a really nice thing to do.
So since we talked last time, Ron, again, taking last week off, it's been election day. Now, not a tremendous election day like the next year, but in Marion, the mayor was reelected. There was a bit of a scandal, some very close races for city council. The Columbus mayor ran unopposed, assortment of school levies and other levies. So certainly some news on a local and regional level, but nothing is going to come close to the excitement and the importance of the election of 2020, which, of course, we'll talk about very soon. But first, I also want to recognize a person who's very brave, very smart, and got an award that he certainly deserves. That would, of course, be your son, David Fineman. Now, that's why you were out last week. You were in the state capitol. I don't think you went to visit Donald and Melania. I think you went to help celebrate this award that David got as an environmental activist. Tell us more about the award, Ron. What was it like? How proud were you as a father to see your son get this rather prestigious award?
Well, I was very, very excited and happy for him, and very much involved in it. What happened is that when he started to work 12 years ago, almost 13 years ago, for Congressman Robert Wexler of Boca Raton, who no longer is in the House of Representatives, my son got involved in the formation with others of this organization called the Association for Safe International Road Travel, Association for Safe International Road Travel, ASIRT. And the person who founded the group, the woman who founded the group, had lost her son like 25 years ago in Turkey on a bus that crashed on the way to the airport. And she formed this organization in honor of her son. And annually, besides what they do all around the world in their activism, she gives an award to someone in honor of her son, and she gave it to my son David this year. So that's why it was a special occasion, and I went to D.C. to be there and was at the event. And my son, of course, gave a great speech, and he was a bit overwhelmed that former Congressman Wexler, was not in attendance, but he was on a video, complimenting David and talking about what he had done 10, 12 years ago. and then there were others who gave testimonial as well. And then he got up to make a speech, and he did it without notes, and he's amazing at that, my son. And he even brought me into it, saying how important I was in his life and how much I had had an impact on the way he turned out as a mature adult. And then, and then I was asked to stand and to, you know, to applause and cheers. And of course, I was a little embarrassed. I had a few tears, but it was really very nice. But more important was the fact that he got this award. It was just a wonderful event, and his commitment to this. He's on the board of directors of this Association for Safe International Road Travel. And this is a massive issue around the world, traffic accidents that cause so much death around the world on a regular basis, much more in automobiles than on planes or in trucks or buses. So it's really an issue that needs to be dealt with worldwide, and he's very much engaged in it since 2007.
It seems like your son, David, although we joke about he doesn't want to Facebook friend me because he doesn't know me in person. That's okay. Not a problem. But it seems like I've had an influence on him. Do you notice his post, his Facebook post from last Tuesday, where he uses the word that I have coined, referring to you as a professor, historian, author, presidentologist, dad, captivating Hill staffers with his thoughts on the upcoming election. So it seems like
I was talking to these two Hill staffers. I didn't know he was taking a photograph of me with him, and then he did call me a presidentologist. That's true.
Yeah, so interestingly, I seem to have had an influence on him, as I'm sure he knows where you got that word from. So, David, if you're listening, thank you for thank you for being such an admirer of my lexicography and my wordsmithiness.
I wish it was a real word in the dictionary. It should be made a word generally anyway, because I think it's not so much for me, but for others who are experts, I think it makes sense to call them presidentologists.
Yeah, well, you know, and you look quite smashing in that photo. The guy on the right, he looks a little like Mayor Pete, doesn't he? That's who I thought it was initially. I mean, it obviously isn't, but kind of similar build and hairstyle.
Who looks like Mayor Pete?
The guy in the picture on November 5th from your son's Facebook, where it's you on the left, lovely lady there in the middle, and a guy on the right looks a little like Mayor Pete, similar kind of hairstyle and stuff. That's kind of what my first
thing. I really hadn't noticed.
And I see also in the fun department on the 3rd of November, meeting Grandpa for the first time. Now, we've talked about your sons. I've not provided you with Homo sapiens grandchildren, but you have a grand cat, apparently.
So two cats, yes.
Grandpa to David.
And they named Han and Luke after the Star Wars characters.
Yeah, and I see the big smile. It seems like the cat and yourself have become very good friends. And
yes.
He's always glad. I guess they're male cats. I guess the Tomcat,
yes.
Luke and Han, they are glad to see their grandpa, of course, reading the newspaper.
Yes.
Not surprisingly. So one cat... very serious look, kind of a dark gray color. The other one, kind of a medium gray and white color. Good looking felines there, and I'm glad that you at least have grand felines in your family. Although no Homo sapiens as grandchildren.
Yeah, well, David has had cats for 20 years and more. He's a big cat person. So, and the last cat died a year ago. So he did without a cat for a year, but now he adopted two kittens. Yes.
Talking with Dr. Ronald L. Feynman, the official presidentologist and political commentator here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, with yours truly, Adam Lepp, the computer guy, the talking and opinionated person on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. During this kind of off year for elections, and it was pretty big in Marion with the scandal with the rather closely contested re-election of Mayor Scott Schertzer. In your neck of the woods there in Florida, Ron, were there any major elections, any senators or congresspeople, mayors of nearby cities, anything really to talk about in the voting arena for this month?
No, not this year. It's the odd year. It's not a year for anything major. Next year, of course, everything will be important, but not this year.
So next year will be a big one. So we're kind of saving up for that one. Now, we did have an Ohioan who was in the Democratic primary arena. He wasn't expected to do very well, and I guess he kind of has thrown the towel in. Mr. Tim Ryan no longer is a contender, along with a more well-known character for candidates. He's kind of a character. Beto O'Rourke from Texas. they have both thrown in the towel. Now, again, Tim Ryan, I kind of like. I mean, it's a biased opinion. He's an Ohioan. I'd like to see an Ohioan as president, although John Kasich as a moderate Republican, or, of course, the guy we mention every week, Sherrod Brown, as a somewhat liberal Democrat, might be a better choice. But Tim Ryan threw his hat in the ring, and that hat has been removed, as has Beto O'Rourke's hat. I think coming in, Ron, O'Rourke was considered to be not necessarily a front runner like Biden, but someone who can be taken seriously. I would say initially he was taken more seriously than Buttigieg, but it seems like Buttigieg is moving up, and O'Rourke finally decided
this one. Yes, he is. He's a serious candidate. I think in the case of O'Rourke, I think probably his biggest mistake was his comments about guns. I think he really destroyed himself. Not that I disagree in theory with him about taking away the automatic weapons, but you can't say that, and you can't really expect anybody to do that. That really riles up the gun owners of America. We're an awful lot of people, and they're ready to use it against any Democrat now, what O'Rourke said. So I think it really was damaging. It was too emotional, and while I agree with him in theory, it's not the real world that you can do that.
No, knocking on your door and taking away your weapons, that's ridiculous. That's also un-American. You can't just knock on someone's door unless there's a warrant or some very good reason or some emergency. And yes,
I agree. I must tell you, in Australia, they passed a law saying everybody had to hand in their guns, and apparently they did. And there's very low gun troubles now in Australia.
But they were able to do it.
I think in Britain they also have that they don't allow them to have private weapons, but it's different somehow.
No, Britain doesn't have the gun laws we have here where people have a right to have a weapon. And I agree, you're American.
Australia.
Have a right to have a weapon, whether you have the right to have an automatic or semi-automatic. Is a different matter, but hunting is allowed, a weapon for protection. Again, be sure to use it safely. I think we need a strengthening of some laws. I think mandatory safety training and possible mental acuity testing would be in order. But the laws in other countries are different than they are here. And the idea you're going to knock on people's doors and confiscate their weapons, that's not even legal as far as I'm concerned. That's illegal search and seizure. And that's, again, we talked about the great things that our veterans have fought for. That's not something that's an American principle. Just like the idea of the socialism. People say, well, we've got socialism in Northern Europe to an extent in Canada. I wouldn't call Canada socialist. I would say under the current prime minister, it's very much to the left, but socialism is a bit of a stretch. But certainly in Scandinavia, Iceland, certainly, those are socialist type of systems. That just doesn't work here. We're a capitalist country with social policies. And the people that say, well, do you like Social Security? Then that's a socialist policy. Well, I disagree.
And Medicare is, of course, yeah.
Yeah, it's a social policy. It doesn't mean that you have socialism. Even calling it a socialist policy is a word that I think is not being used properly, and it's not going to sucker someone like myself in. I understand we have the compassionate capitalism, that we have social policies, but if you want a system like they have in Scandinavia, I just suggest that you move there, because it's not going to work here. In terms of national health care, interestingly, I think Ron and I are pretty much in agreement, almost like what Buttigieg says. It's there. It will be there if you want it, but it isn't going to be forced down your throat. And in addition, we need a great reform of Obamacare. As I, again, my opinion of Obamacare certainly is more extreme than Ron's. I think it's a complete disaster, and it's caused tremendous hikes in premiums. It's caused people to be able to get insurance, but they can't afford it, so that makes it a moot point. And rates continue to skyrocket. Of course, we have the big pharmaceutical companies. They aren't exactly saints, but I think Obamacare has left an atmosphere where that's almost encouraged. I don't know what the solution is. I'm not smart enough, but I do know things were better 15 years ago, and they're getting worse. And healthcare is a serious crisis. I'd like to see some good answers by the candidates. And you probably would agree, Ron, Buttigieg's answer seems the most cerebral. Whether or not he can accomplish it, I don't know. It'll make it available if you
actually
want it.
His and Amy Klobuchar, who doesn't get as much attention, has very similar views, and Joe Biden. I'm really getting the feeling, as I look at it, I don't know what's going to happen, but I think Warren, by her Medicare for All idea, probably is shooting herself in the foot or somewhere else. I think it's going to harm her. I think Sanders the same. And on the other hand, Biden may, with his son, have no issue, but the Republicans are going to keep on talking about Hunter Biden. They want him at these impeachment hearings, whether he's there or not. I think they're all flawed candidates, F-L-A-W-E-D, and I'm thinking, my mind is Midwest, why not Pete for president and Amy for vice president, both from the Midwest? I think it'd be a great ticket and a moderate centrist ticket, and I think it could win.
Right, but as I've mentioned, and again, I want to preface this again, women are not a minority. They're actually a majority among adults because they live longer. But in terms of presidents, they're a minority because we've never had a female president. Pete is gay. Otherwise, he's a white male, a young white male. So he's not even an old white guy. But we've had presidents in their 40s. I mean, Clinton, for example, which I wouldn't call that old. It's more middle-aged. So Pete being young, middle-aged, but still a member of a minority. I think one minority per ticket, as I see it, is all that would be a wise choice. Doesn't mean I wouldn't like Amy as VP. I think she would be a great VP. Last time we had a Democratic VP from Minnesota, I was very happy. Of course, that would be Mr. Mondale. But in this case, I think if Pete were to be president, we would need to pick an old white guy as vice president.
Like Sherrod Brown, maybe, you think.
Brown being an excellent choice. Brown being, I would say,
that's
more
a tremendous difference. There'd be 29 years difference in age, while Joe Biden and Obama were only, 18 years apart or something, or 19 years apart. That's a tremendous difference. But, yeah, I think he would be a possible choice as well. But I think if we had Midwesterners, that might help overcome the Hillary Clinton problem in the last election.
Brown is not certainly as liberal as Warren, but he's to the left of Buttigieg, whereas Klobuchar and Buttigieg are probably pretty similar on the spectrum. So, again, makes Brown a good choice, being from two neighboring states, Ohio being a state that you pretty much have to win if you want to be president, and Indiana being somewhat conservative, and whether Mayor Pete would allow Indiana to become a Democratic state with respect to electoral votes, who knows, but it certainly wouldn't hurt. But that, again, would be a good choice. But as I've said, it would have been a much better choice for Hillary, because if she would have picked Brown instead of that stupid choice of Tim Kaine, not that Tim Kaine's not a good guy, just he's boring, wishy-washy, and Brown doesn't have any charisma either. And again, it's biased because I know the guy, but I just see him as a better choice. And you and I know, Ron, the minute we saw Trump winning Ohio, and not just by 10 votes, overwhelmingly winning Ohio, we knew the election was over. I thought he'd win Ohio, but not the margin that he did. And maybe with Brown, he still would have lost Ohio. The Democrats would have lost Ohio, but it wouldn't have been to the margin that they did. And very well, that could have helped Hillary. But who knows? Hindsight is 20/20. Let's hope that whoever runs as a Democrat, first, it's someone that I like, because the list of Democrats that I like is small. And that if it is a person I like, that he or she picks a good choice as vice president. In that case, it'll be no contest as to whom I vote for. But if that isn't the case, I regretfully may have to vote to leave Donald in Pennsylvania Avenue. But we'll find out. And of course,
I'm surprised that O'Rourke withdrawing has not agreed to run for the Senate seat in Texas, though. I think he should, but apparently he's not. So I think that's a mistake. The Democrats have to have good candidates to run for the Senate, like Steve Bullock, who's still in the race, the only governor from Montana, to have him run for the Senate seat there, because you need a majority in the Senate to control the Supreme Court in the future and other major appointments.
Yeah, and I do like Bullock, as I mentioned, very smart guy, and we'll see what's up with him. Talking with Dr. Ron Feinman here on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, Adam being I, and we thank Ron for his appearance, as we always do. On your blog, Ron, theprogressiveprofessor.com, you write about current politics, history. Sometimes it's nonpartisan, sometimes it's slanted to the left. Again, you're not an extreme left person like Warren. You're more, again, a typical Biden or Buttigieg type of Democratic homo sapiens. You write, a couple days before Halloween, indications are that suburbia, traditionally Republican for decades, is changing. Political observers see two areas of suburbia, the inner suburbs near major urban areas and the outer suburbs much further away and closer to rural areas. Now, with my interest in geography and demographics, this is quite fascinating. Now, in Ohio is a very good case in point. Cincinnati, for example. The city of Cincinnati is somewhat Democratic, and I mention that people think, well, Cincinnati is just so conservative. It has that reputation. Well, parts of the city, but in general, Cincinnati is more to the left. I've also mentioned that in my lifetime, Cincinnati has had two mayors that were very liberal. Of course, Jerry Springer and Roxanne Qualls. And Cincinnati's governmental system also has changed in that it used to have a weak mayor system. It's gone to a strong mayor system. But I'd say the mayor isn't quite as strong as a mayor in Columbus. It's still not at that level, but it's certainly different than it was. For example, when Springer or Qualls were in the mayor's office. But the suburbs of Cincinnati, Butler County, for example, Claremont County, conservative to very conservative. And that's an example where you leave the city limits, go to a suburb, demographics changes, and the political leanings change. And we've seen, of course, some differences there and some changes. Also, in the rural parts of Ohio, they are certainly going to be more Republican. Then we have the small to medium-sized cities like Marion. Marion is traditionally fairly Republican, but we have a Democratic mayor who just won re-election and has been mayor for quite a while. Now, Scott Schertzer is a fairly moderate Democrat, but still, in a city that's Republican, you have a Democratic mayor. I guess it's just balance, but that's kind of how politics tends to be, Ron. You balance things out. And also, I think you'd agree, in city politics, I don't really think political party really means anything. Political parties are more on a national level. And in a city like Marion, does it really matter what party Mayor Schertzer is? I don't
think. Also, the state level, and state level.
Yeah, does it make much of a difference? In terms of the governor, we had a moderate Republican governor, Kasich, again, who's moderated quite a bit since his younger days, but he's never really an extreme conservative, but to the point now where he's liberal than I think a lot, some Democrats are, especially on some issues. But he was replaced by a traditional, rather conservative governor, Mr. DeWine. And although I admired Mike DeWine's record of public service and his knowledge, I mean, he's a smart man, but his viewpoints on things like the abortion issue aren't cool as far as I'm concerned. Also, that he's made those a high priority when we have other issues, the quality of the roads, the economy, employment, pollution, obviously health care, things that I think he should be concentrating on. So I kind of wonder if DeWine's going to last an additional term as governor, but I guess... guess you and I will find out. And in this case, as you said, in state politics, party does mean more than it does in city politics, but certainly not as much as someone who's on a national level, as a congressman or congressperson, senator, or of course, president. Speaking of local politicians, Ron, who are conservative and also controversial, Mr. Jim Jordan has been in the news quite a bit. In fact, he was a front page story on CNN.com when I looked a couple days ago, and he is the local congressperson to many of our listeners in the local area. So what's up with that, Ron? Is his reputation permanently damaged, or do people not really going to care about this scandal? Do you think he's committed a crime where he should be locked up? What's the current state of Mr. Jordan from your perspective?
Well, this Ohio State University wrestling scandal, where he supposedly was aware of what was going on, the abuse back a few decades ago, I think it's going to start biting him in the rear ends, you know. And meanwhile, he's one of the ones pushing for Hunter Biden to be at the impeachment hearings, which have nothing to do with Donald Trump, really. But they're just trying to bring in this so-called scandal of Hunter and Joe Biden, which apparently does not exist. So hopefully it will not happen that Hunter Biden will have to testify. But he has no scruples, ethics, or morals at all, in my mind. You know, your congressman, Jim Jordan, you know, in your area, I think he's really outrageous and disgraceful. But he keeps on getting elected by large margins, so I guess he's pretty safe at this point.
There are obviously people, Ron, who are going to support someone regardless of what the news has to say. Certainly with Jordan, he's gained a lot of notoriety. He's become a household name, and it's nice to have the Marion area be on the front page of the news, but not for a reason like this. It's, this case, very embarrassing. And let's hope that it comes to a head, and whatever the resolution is, we can move forward, as it's not a happy news story whatsoever. And every day it seems like there's an additional surprise. Adam here on a finer mid-morning coffee break with the professor, Dr. Ronald L. Feynman. You wrote a couple weeks ago, Ron, and that actually has changed now, 14 weeks until first vote in Iowa. Iowa and Ohio sound kind of similar, don't they? Iowa caucuses. Now, that's 12 weeks because you wrote that on October 28th. That's pretty crazy, Ron. Less than 3 months until the Iowa caucuses.
And then, you know, February 3rd is the first vote, and March 3rd is the Super Tuesday. And, of course, November 3rd was, it just passed. So, yeah, it's getting very close now. Yeah.
And so every day, every second that ticks away, we get closer and closer to this, what will no doubt be, groundbreaking 2020 election. You're right, Ron. Iowa is not truly decisive on who wins the nomination and the presidency in either major political party, as the only times that Iowa was a sign of the future was when an incumbent president was not on the ballot. And even then, not very often. Democrats Mondale, Gore, Kerry, Obama, and Clinton. Republicans Ford, Dole, Bush. So only George W. Bush in 2000 and Barack Obama in 2008 won Iowa and went on to win the presidency in the fall of those years. Now, Iowa is not a highly populous state, but it is in the Midwest. It's three states away, so it's a regional location. But
it's also a caucus, not a primary. I don't think the caucuses are really representative. Caucuses in the Republican Party tend to be to the far right and the Democratic Party to the far left, while primaries come much more toward the moderate center when the whole population is involved. So I think Warren probably has the edge in Iowa, but I don't think necessarily she's going to be the nominee. But on the other hand, Pete's also surging and is right behind her. So Pete could be a surprise in Iowa.
But from a celebrational perspective, Iowa being the first time that electoral votes are tallied, pretty much is off to the races after that. And of course, Super Tuesday probably being the biggest day for primaries.
14 states, including California and Texas, the biggest ones in population, yes.
Bottom line is, if you're a political aficionado like Ron and myself, I would suggest you get some good sleep over the next few months, because all you know what is going to break loose after Groundhog's Day in February.
I have to say that the way things look now, Kamala Harris seems to be dead in the water, it seems to me. And yet, if she can't do well in California on March 3rd, she's done. And I just have a feeling she's no longer a serious candidate. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she'll revive. She's still in the race, but she has not been talked about much yet, and she's cutting back on some of her campaign staff in several states. So I have a feeling Kamala Harris is probably not going anywhere.
It would seem like Harris, like O'Rourke, was considered to be a front runner or a second front runner, and they have certainly faded. O'Rourke, I didn't think he'd throw the towel in so quickly, but he did, probably having to do with lack of funding. And Harris, she started strong, but those days seem to be behind her. And we'll see what happens. She's still fairly young and still well-known, so yeah. I don't think we've heard the last of her. You wrote on the 8th, Ron, a few days ago, the Republican Party of Lincoln, Roosevelt, Eisenhower, Reagan, and George H.W. Bush has gone totally bonkers as the 2019. I've never seen you use that word before, Ron, bonkers. That's a new one for you. As usually I say wacko, but wacko bonkers. As the 2019 Republican Party has demonstrated, it is totally unprincipled on the growing evidence of the clear-cut obstruction of justice, abuse of power, and other crimes that call for President Donald Trump to be impeached. By comparison, Bill Clinton was a choir boy, with the worst action he took being engaging in adult activities in the Oval Office and not being a good boy and not telling the truth. Will the Republican Party ever come out of its fog and unreal state of consciousness? Doesn't that kind of sound like the Jordan story where people are just oblivious? They don't really care what somebody does. They're still going to love them. Do you see parallels there, Ron?
Yes. Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, Newt Gingrich, and Rudy Giuliani, they're all so despicable. You know, and these were all people, maybe not Giuliani, but the others, all pushing for the impeachment of Clinton. And now you can see the exact opposite they're saying when the charges and the evidence is so much more serious than was so with Clinton. I'm not defending Clinton and what he did 20 years ago, but this is far worse. You know, but yet they're unwilling to do what's right for the country.
So we'll just see what happens, but some people are going to support their candidate, their politician, regardless of what he or she does. And that's politics for you. And, you know, Democrats do the same thing. Everybody is guilty, and it's okay to stand by your person, but sometimes...
Accuracy, we call it.
Sometimes enough is enough, and you have to make that decision as to when do you pull the plug. Also wrote a few days ago, this blogger and author has been away for a few days and has decided to wait until we know the results of the few elections taking place in 2019 before making an educated guess on the presidential election of 2020. Let's begin with what states are assured to be in the Democratic camp next year. In New England, pretty much all of them, as New England is fairly Democratic. Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, a total of 33 electoral votes. New York, D.C., Maryland, New Jersey, Delaware, going a little further south, but going into the more deep south, the only assured Democratic victory is Virginia, which isn't even that south. It's more like a South Atlantic type state.
Part of the old Confederacy, as we say.
So bottom line is the deep south states, Georgia, Arkansas, of course, Florida, the Carolinas, Mississippi, you're pretty sure those will be going Republican, or might those flip also?
Well, as I said, I think Arizona's not the South, but I think Florida will likely go to the Democrats, if you go further down in that article. So I see 233 electoral votes, definitely, and then I really think Arizona and Florida will guarantee the Democrats 273, but other states that might go in order of odds are Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, North Carolina, and Georgia. So I can see 27 states and D.C. and a grand total of 350 electoral votes, but possibly one more in the 2nd District of Nebraska, which voted for Obama. They have a split vote, as does Maine, so I think that it's possible it could be 351. And we leave 187 for Donald Trump.
Yeah, bottom line is it's going to be a very close one. You have states likely to go Democratic. You mentioned Arizona and Florida, and states that might go Democratic. And some of these states are near Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, North Carolina, Georgia, and Wisconsin. Kind of surprising, isn't it? North Carolina quite conservative. I'm kind of surprised to see that on the list.
Yeah, but it's becoming more and more moving in the direction of being possibly Democratic. It's seen as more likely than Georgia, even. Notice I put North Carolina ahead of Georgia. Georgia will be harder to do. But if they can win Arizona and Florida, they will have enough electoral votes to win. Or they win one of the others that's listed. And, of course, this is all subject to change over the next year as we get more information and more sense from polls. So I'm not claiming this is a final conclusion. But I was right in 2008 and 2012, not in 2016. So I'll have to make a final judgment in October of next year, of course. And I'll probably modify some of what I've said.
Bottom line is, Ron, it will be extremely close.
Probably, yes.
There's not enough to win the election based upon the states that you feel are sure bets, and so you have many that are on the fence. Also, it seems like you are pretty confident that Ohio will become a Republican victory, but if we were to have...
So it seems. Yeah, I wish I could say otherwise, but from my perspective. And the trouble is that if the Republican wins Ohio, every Republican who has won, except Ford, who wasn't elected and was appointed and then lost, every elected Republican has won Ohio. So if Trump wins Ohio and then Trump does not win, then it means the first time that Ohio has not been with the winner when a Republican wins. So
we have...
It's a problem, yes.
We have Michigan on the fence, but every other state that borders Ohio, you have as a Republican victory. I think West Virginia...
Iowa and Indiana.
Yeah, West Virginia and Kentucky, we can be pretty confident those will be Republican. But what if Mayor Pete...
I'm very thrilled about the fact that in Kentucky, the Republican governor, Matt Bevin, who I think was horrific, got defeated by a close vote, 5,000 votes. I'm very happy about that. It's a big step forward. And also the Virginia legislature became blue for the first time in 25 years, both houses of the Virginia legislature. So it was a good election day for those two states as far as the Democratic Party.
But you don't think with that gubernatorial upset, that that's still going to make Kentucky a Democratic voting presidential state?
I doubt it. And West Virginia used to always be Democratic, but now I just don't see it happening, unfortunately, from my perspective. No, I don't think so. If that happens, well, if West Virginia and Kentucky go Democratic, then it's going to be a landslide, because then it means other states would, but I don't think that's likely. That's a very long shot.
If Mayor Pete is the nominee, will that flip Indiana, or is Indiana just so Republican it's not really going to matter?
Well, it's going to be difficult because Mike Pence is from Indiana. I think it put it into play, but I don't know. Obama did win Indiana in 08, so anything is possible. There's no way to know, and there'll be a lot of campaigning and the conventions come up, and an awful lot to happen next year, and a lot depends, because there is a chance, some chance, that Mike Pence could be president in the next year. There is a chance. I wrote an article in History News Network. It's possible, unlikely. So if that happens, the whole equation changes. But I have not predicted who the candidates will be in this article, because I'd like to think it's Pete against Trump, but I don't know. It's hard to predict this far ahead.
Yeah. Bottom line is, this will be a hotly contested election, and if you are tired of hearing political ads, you probably want to not watch any TV or radio for a while, because there are going to be nonstop ads, nonstop mudslinging. It's going to be a... You think you'd agree, Ron? This may be the dirtiest campaign ever. Last time was pretty dirty. This may out-dirtify, do you think?
Well, Donald Trump has no limits on dirt, so I agree, yes.
It certainly will not be a pretty one, unless you like a lot of comedy. You like to hear a lot of mudslinging and probably some words you wouldn't want to say in polite company. Do encourage our listeners to go to historynewsnetwork.org, because on November 3rd, by Ronald L. Fineman, what if Mike Pence is the 2020 Republican presidential nominee? Certainly is possible. Could the House vote to impeach Donald Trump by the end of the year? The tumult over the Ukraine telephone conversation. I think you forgot to write the word conversation there, Ron. The tumult over the Ukraine telephone between Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky led Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi to launch a formal impeachment inquiry. So we encourage our listeners.
Oh, yes, I see that now. Oh, my gosh. Yes, oh, my gosh. And that wasn't picked up by them either. I'll have to write it to change that. Yeah.
Okay, Adam, yeah. The English police strikes again. I make up words like presidentologist, which your son decides to use. I correct a PhD's English. Never quite know what's going to come out.
Not perfect. I'm not Donald Trump. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes.
Yes. Well, you do agree that even Ron, with all of his degrees and all of his publications and fame and fortune, is still not perfect. And on that note, we will thank our listeners for tuning in today to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Time flies when you're having fun. This is a fine show discussing multiple topics. Not a lot of controversy, but that's okay. We sometimes want to tone that down. Maybe next week we'll argue about the wall, about ICE, and anything else that Ron and I might not see eye to eye on. For about a minute or two left, Ron, any previews of any coming attractions, things you're going to write about in your blog over the next few days?
Well, I was away for a few days and didn't post on the blog, as you noticed, for a few days. And right now I'm in a time period of a lot of grading of exams for classes. So I will write something, but I honestly cannot tell you exactly what I'm going to be doing, other than I'm writing an article now about the impeachment hearings are starting on Wednesday. They're going to be covered on all the networks, all the cable networks, and even on BBC, so there'll be a lot of attention paid to the testimony in public. So that's going to be a big event starting on Wednesday of this week.
Well, we shall find out. We encourage folks to read historynewsnetwork.org, where scholars like Ron talk about history, current events, and other fun stuff. And of course, read Ron's blog every day, which he writes to theprogressiveprofessor.com. Thank you again, Ron, for joining us here on
Thanks
a fine
so
mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. You stay warm there in Florida, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.